Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches. Welcome to Baroque Bitches, your art and art history gossip podcast. I'm Raquel.
I'm Chelsea.
And we are back for another disgusting little week.
Oh. Well, I'm so excited for that. Disgusting.
I don't know how disgusting it is.
The audacity.
No, I just want to highlight to start people off, maybe you're new here. If you don't want to hear the words bitch and fuck and maybe sometimes cunt, like
syphilis.
This is like a dirty art history lesson.
Yeah.
Only stay if you can, hang, you know?
Yeah. We get it. It's fine.
Yeah. We're not here for the prudish.
We might not be your people.
We may not be for you, and that's okay. That's okay. You know,
go explore.
There's the History Channel out there. There's lots of other things that are all catered to you.
Yeah.
This one, we try to get as dumb as possible with this stuff.
Yes.
So
yeah,
thanks for taking, you know, coming and getting lowbrow with us all.
Sure.
We got exciting new patrons on Patreon.
Woo-hoo.
Thank you guys so much. We love you so, so much.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. We can't believe it. We're so...
New content.
Some
really new fancy content coming soon for our patrons.
Mm-hmm. Early releases and videos.
Yeah.
And a bonus episode. So we're going to do a bonus episode on third gender in art. It'll be available on Patreon this month. In April, at the end of the month.
April.
Right? Yeah. So how's your week, Joel? How's it going?
It was good. Weather's been weird out here.
Yeah.
We've got some hail going
on. Oh, that's always fun. The hail in California.
Yeah. Oh. Like, what is this? What's happening? What is this sound? And it's just like one cloud of hail. And then you get out of the cloud and it's like beautiful sunshine.
Right.
It's bizarre. It is aliens.
Driving my car in Sonoma. And I'm like 18, probably, and it's my first year at college, and all of a sudden it starts downpouring hail. I call my dad. I'm like, Dad, there's like what rocks falling from the sky. The fuck is going on? He's like, it sounds like it's hail. I'm like, it looks like snow. He's like, just pull over.
Yeah, it can be kind of ruthless and scary. You're more used to weather now that you're in Ohio.
Unfortunately.
I don't really do weather out here.
Oh, my God. We had a tornado warning. Did I tell you about this?
Yeah.
It came like within a few miles of us. North of us, and there's sirens that ring out like in like fucking
Silent Hill.
And so
that
I was like,
is terrified. The fucking triangle head man is gonna come out.
It was so scary. And so we're just watching the fucking Weather Channel like maniacs, just looking at it like, is it coming? We had to watch for the winds can shift really fast apparently. And then you'll get like a, you know, like the Amber Alert sound on your phone, like the,
oh God,
it'll sound off if it's like near enough to affect where you are.
Gonna fuck your house up.
So we're just like waiting, you know, and like, do we wake the kids up? Do we bring them downstairs? So naturally, yeah, it's intense. And so I was just telling Chelsea, I have had a lot of anxiety lately, and I was re-diagnosed with postpartum depression.
Yay!
Oh,
no.
So that's on my docket. I thought I was in the clear. Zelma's 10 months old. She'll be 10 months old this week, but nope. Tried to ignore it.
Body chemistry is not perfect.
Nope. I'm all wacky doodle. No, I'm fine. It's just, you know, when you feel like everything is out of control and there's so much to do, but you're paralyzed by your anxiety. Yeah, that's what I'm going through. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I definitely think, I hope a lot of our listeners can kind of understand and commiserate a little bit with anxiety stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know it burdens a lot of us.
If you are high anxiety, we are right there with you. Oh, we get it. We get it. You're not alone.
We are not alone.
And that's sometimes the best things to hear, too, of like, oh, someone can commiserate. It's all good.
Yeah, totally.
Like, other people freak out in the grocery store. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, and you know, it's weird because I had postpartum with Diego, and I just remember telling the doctor about my symptoms. And her telling me, like, oh, you have postpartum. And I was like, what? Like, really? Because I'm not remembering things. And because I'm like, you know, it wasn't like the typical depression symptoms. It was like my body like feels like I feel dizzy sometimes. I feel like weightless sometimes, like disconnected from my body. And like I'm having racing thoughts. And she's like, no, that's postpartum. That sounds... I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not just, I think a lot of people think that depression is just like, I'm not necessarily feeling sad.
Yeah.
But like I feel like tired. The world is ending.
Yeah, like a lot of people think depression is just like being sad and not wanting to wash your hair or something.
Yeah.
But it's like.
Which that could be, but that, which it's it can a lot look like of that things. Too.
But it can manifest in so many other different ways. And mine just happened to be like weird physical manifestations. That make me think I'm dying all the time. So,
totally. Oh, I got that for sure.
But yeah, so we're on our mental health medication journey again.
Yay.
So hopefully in a few weeks I'll be feeling really good here.
Well, good. Yeah, it's responsible to go seek help. It'll make you feel better.
Yeah, I hope so.
But it is a weird astrological stuff going on this week too, with a full solar eclipse.
Yeah,
that so you get to see.
I know. I'm probably gonna freak the fuck out. So we're in a spot of totality, which means that the sun will be fully covered where I'm at. So it'll go like dark. Wow. Pitch black? I don't know what to expect.
I think there's going to be like a little ring. Like it looks like a little like sun ring. And even in the sun's rings, you can see, or like the outline of the sun, since the moon is going to block a lot of the light, you're going to be able to see like solar flares and stuff like that. Like you're going to be able to see like weird shit coming off of the sun that we're usually not able to see.
See, and I don't know how I feel about that, but
makes you feel small, right?
But they are doing cute things, like they're handing out eclipse glasses for free at all the stores in downtown where I live. School is canceled that day with the anticipation of like a shit ton of people coming here. And so we're all getting eclipse party.
Yeah. And the eclipse is really just a symbol of your world crashing around you and starting new. So I feel like a lot of people probably are. I've been experiencing that with like all my other friends and stuff and family of I am completely changing my life and it's horrible. And you're like, yep, but it's going to get better. It's going to get better. Everything is going to feel like it's going completely out of control, but it's what's supposed to happen before a new, fresher, happier life for everybody.
That actually makes me feel really reassured and good. Yeah. So,
a lot of you might be feeling like, why is everything feeling just totally out of control? Mm-hmm. I'm making all of these changes or changes are happening to you in your life that you feel like you can't control, but that's all good stuff. So it's always got to be kind of a storm, and then there is light. There's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel of new transitions and new passions and new lifestyle changes, and all for the better. So
good.
That's going to feel weird for a while. Yeah, it's going to feel. It's supposed to feel pretty crazy weird for a while. Yeah, and then things will flop right over into, oh, that was supposed to happen, even though that sucked. But all of that shit was supposed to happen.
I hope so. I hope you're right. I'm going with that you're going to be right, that you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, go with it. Go with the flow. Just let the universe to handle it.
My grandma always says, it'll all be okay in the end. If it's not okay, then it's not the end. And so...
Oh, I like that.
Just, she's going to be 94 this year, I think.
There you go, grandma. Ooh,
girl. But yeah. Well, speaking of people that had lots of anxiety and difficulty dealing with life's many emotions, are we ready to visualize?
Dude, I'm so ready. Let's go.
Okay, let's visualize. Just picture it, Barbara. I'm in a room filled with every luxury you could imagine. But every luxury is also, like, riddled with imagination and weird trickery. There are paintings on every wall, and it feels like a royal castle, but, like, with a fun, weird show. I can't decide if it's, like, a dream or a nightmare. But I guess that's probably the point. I mean, there are piles of crawfish stacked 2 feet high in the form of a tree. Crawfish trees, creamed lamb brains, bowls of fish eyes, fruit platters made to look like paintings. Oh my God, I mean, it's disgusting. But I heard that they hate it when people don't eat. So yes, I'm eating the tree fish and the brains, and I'm acting like everything is roses. Yes, yes. Oh my goodness, yes. It was the wildest thing you've ever seen. There's a long table filled with faces from the tabloids. Alfred Hitchcock, Ginger Rogers, and then a frog jumped off of the plate onto Bob Hope. Can you imagine? All the dishes just look so marvelously terrifying. Oh, and I hear he's obsessed with cauliflower. But it was the weirdest thing. So we're right in the middle of the party, and suddenly he disappears with Gala and several guests, and they weren't seen for a long time. So of course I went in to go peek, and there I see Dolly sitting in a chair. It was like everyone was having the best time. I couldn't see them, but I could hear them. And then there's Dolly just sitting in a chair, staring. Yes, I'm still here now. They just brought a plate with a shoe on it. Oh, oh wait, there's a fish in the shoe. Oh God, I guess I have to eat this too. Okay, ciao. I'll talk to you soon. So welcome to Salvador Dali. Well, who put that there?
Oh, that sounds very surreal.
Dude.
Oh my God.
There is so much stuff that happened to this man. Well, I shouldn't say happened to. I said was invented, curated, created by this man. I know that the persistence of memory, you know, the drippy clock
melty
painting.
Melty clocks. Yes. Yeah,
it adorns the room of, like, so many college dorm rooms.
Yes. Yeah.
But what about Dali? Do you, I mean, you know who he is. Do you know much about him?
I don't know too much about him as a person besides kind of how he presents himself a little bit in a couple of interviews of very – that's definitely some audacity right there.
Yeah.
Of very, very full of it, very confident. I am the best artist in the world. Like that kind of thing. He's absolutely iconic mustache. He's eccentric and dreamy, and he's talking about the biggest guy in surrealism, which is like dreamy art about your dreams and psychology and weird symbols and
yeah
yeah
and he
yeah,
like
long
creates,
elephants
like- And it's like he creates this persona to match, like, you know, we're always kind of looking for artists to be what we like, somewhat eccentric, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't want artists to just be like normal Joe Schmoes, and we're disappointed when they are.
Totally.
Right? I mean, yeah. Like, you're not weird. What are you doing here? Who invited you?
So you don't think you're the best thing since sliced bread? Like, yeah.
So I was laughing because you posted on Instagram the quote, Salvador Dali, I don't take drugs, I am drugs.
Yes.
And I thought I was so cool in college. I put that quote in like my Facebook.
Okay.
And it was like that quote. I'm like, I'm going to put some quotes that really speak about me.
Yeah. So I put, I'm so different.
I'm so different. Rebellious. I'm like, oh, I like that. So I put that one. And then I had another quote from Snoop Dogg. That was when I get old. Yeah. I think it was like, when I get old, I want to open up an ice cream shop and call myself Scoop Dog.
There you go. Yeah. So, obviously.
In case you were wondering how cool I am.
How cool our Facebook world was in the day.
It was.
You still have one?
I do, but it's just for like gratuitous photos of the fam. For for like my family members. That's really
Yeah, the older generation.
I wasn't gonna say it, but yeah. That's
totally no it. Hate if you like Facebook. No that hate. Is all you.
No hate. No hate.
That's wonderful.
But yeah, no, Instagram has that lovely feature. You share right to the Facebook and boom.
Yeah.
Everybody's caught up on what you're doing.
Yeah, I usually just get the scoop from like my mom because she's Facebook queen.
Oh, she's so good.
She's so good at Facebook. Oh, she should be like a media manager or something.
Oh my God, she should be our media manager. Terry, we need you.
she gets all of the scoop okay, have you talked to this person lately? Yeah, well, here is everything in their life right now.
Oh my God.
So I get all the drama when I go visit my mom, and then she just opens up Facebook and it's like, look at this. I'm like, damn,
tea and a half. I love that. I love her. Well, we're gonna dive a bit deeper than just the persistence of memory today, but I am gonna get into the symbolism and meaning of that painting because we have to.
It's a melty clock.
Yeah.
We love the melty clock.
But first we gotta do some context.
Okay,
ASL, age
application. Oh my gosh. I got a message.
Laughing about the smoked salmon.
We got a couple of messages about the smoked salmon. I was kind of dying in the car. If you
don't know about the smoked salmon, go listen to King Akhenaten episode. Yes, oh my God.
Last episode. Of full random core age 12 with AIM talking it, getting in those, sneaking in those chat rooms.
Oh and my God.
You know, if you know, you know. You know what you're doing. We see you.
Yes. Well, for this one, we are going to Catalonia, Spain. It's the early 1900s. And Catalonia is like historically the richest part of Spain. And it was a really crazy time for Spain. There's a lot of like political turmoil, economic downturn. And I'm not going to get deep into the politics because this is really more about getting to know the type of person Dalí was, but it will come into play throughout his life a little bit later on. So what you need to know is that Catalonia at this point is more of a nationalist part of Spain.
Okay.
Boo. And while the rest of the country is sort of not doing so hot, they're like a booming industry. Oh. And Dalí, his family is doing pretty good. They have a home in Catalonia and they summer in Cadaqués. So they're like chilling.
Must be nice.
Yeah, right? So mom is Felia Domenech Ferrez. I trilled my R. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
And dad is Salvador Dalí y Cusi. So mom was actually an artist and very supportive of Dalí, Her family, oh. Yes, we love mom. Yeah. Doesn't happen very often. Yeah. Her family actually had a business making little tchotchke artsy things like fans and trinket boxes and things like that. And she would sculpt little figurines from wax candles. And so...
Cool.
And she apparently very much doted on Dali and was a very warm and soft spot for him. And Dad, on the other hand, total machismo. Ooh. He was a lawyer or a notary. And definitely get the, like, children are meant to be seen, not heard vibes from Dad, you know?
Yeah. Of you're not really. I don't know why I even made you.
Right. It's like,
why are you here? Go play somewhere.
Go be quiet in the corner.
Yeah.
I will call you when I need you to feel good about myself, sort of, Dad.
Damn, Dad.
Yeah. Well, things get even weirder because in 1902, Salvador Gallo Anselmo Dali is born. And I think you're probably thinking that's our guy, right? Well, you would be wrong. So Salvador Gallo Anselmo Dali dies in 1903. Of an infectious stomach disease.
Oh, no.
His younger brother, Salvador Domingo Felipe Jacinto Dali y Dominic, is born May 11th, 1904. Oh. So, yes, mom and dad did have a son before him that was first named Dali, or I mean Salvador. And then they named Dali Salvador as well. So, apparently this is, like, really jarring. For him as a young child, he was always kind of unsure if they were referring to him or to his dead brother. And so that, this gives him like
feel weird.
Yeah.
Right. Of like, oh, it's just kind of like a redo type of situation.
Like,
you couldn't have thought of a different name for me. Since that other one died.
I know. It's not exactly the best look, but it does give you a real idea of like, how Dad must have felt, like, no, I want a son named Salvador or something, I guess.
Seriously.
You know, like,
either really. That too, or I would always feel like, am I doing this okay? Or what? I would like be comparing myself, I think, in a weird way to like, what would have happened if, you know, he didn't die?
Yeah. Right. And I think that all happens and it's so strange. And he says there's like a picture of his younger brother that hung above his parents' bed and he would just like stare at it. And he began to believe oh my God, I know. Can you imagine, like as a little kid, you're just so familiarized with like the concept of death and dying. Yeah. And he began to believe that he was his brother reincarnated.
For sure.
So this definitely comes up later on. Pretty fucked up right off the bat. No real chance of a normal childhood for our dear Dali. But we did breeze over that Dali was a Taurus. So you didn't think I was going to jump over that, did you?
Yeah, we love a good Taurus.
We love a Taurus. My husband and my 11-month-old daughter are both Tauruses. And let me tell you, they are a ride and a half. they both love to eat and sleep.
Yes.
Actually, this little blurb from Allure gave me a different idea about Tauruses. So I'm going to go ahead and read this. Taurus is an earth sign represented by the bull. These cosmic oxen are enchanted by any physical manifestation of comfort and luxury. Pleasure is a necessity for Epicurean Taurians, and they feel most content when pampered.
Oh.
It's true. It's true that in their perfect world, Tauruses would spend all day bathing in a tub overflowing with essential oils.
Oh. Must be nice.
Yeah. At the same time. At the same time, Tauruses aren't afraid to roll up their sleeves, work hard to earn big rewards. It must be noted, however, that Taurus does have a bit of a reputation. What a Taurus perceives as dedication is often regarded by others as stubbornness.
Yes.
So sometimes you'll see them lingering in unhealthy situations because they don't want to give up on them, pretty much. Mm. But they are very trustworthy and devoted and dependable partners and lovers. So this rings true for Dolly in so many ways. And I'm definitely looking at my husband's stubbornness as dedication to whatever the fuck he wants to be doing.
I feel like my favorite part about a Taurus is every time you go to a Taurus's house, they're like, okay, let me show you all the cool things that I've gotten since you've last been here.
That's actually true.
And then you're like, cool, yeah, let me get involved in your stuff and your food and let me try your new alcohol that you're into. Like, fine, yes.
That's funny because Fabian loves to give a house tour. Totally.
Yeah. Okay. What has happened since you've last been here?
Yeah.
Okay. I changed this and I changed. What do you think? I'm like, I love all your things, man. I'm doing great.
Oh my God, that's so cute. I love it. It's so true. So. Oh man. So though mom and dad definitely have a weird, like, you will never live up to your brother / you are God's gift to us after your brother thing going on, they do manage to do a really cool thing and send Dolly to art school.
Yay!
So look up Crepuscular Old Man.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know. So Dolly Freaky. Would have been 13 when he painted this painting.
Damn.
For those of you who can't get to a phone to look this up right now, we'll put it on Instagram, baroque.b.podcast. Follow us, like, subscribe, whatever. But for those who can't look it up, picture a painting of an old man walking towards you as the viewer. And this is done in an impressionist style. It looks to be set at that golden hour just before the sun sets. The old man's looking down, and behind him you can see a bridge reflecting off the water. And there are blotches of paint that are like potentially clouds, but make no real effort at realism. And they're more like flesh-toned chunks splotched all around the sky, but they're like evocative. The whole painting's evocative. It's dark, it's haunting, but it's also like beautiful, right?
Yeah, this is definitely an angsty teenager painting this right now.
I mean, can you believe that came out of a 13-year-old? It's just like, it's so
there's
good.
Some thoughts in that dome.
Some crevices in that brain, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is super dark.
Yeah.
But really cool.
Right?
And, yeah, thought-provoking of this is kind of persistence of time kind of vibe.
Yeah, right?
Old man kind of hunched over looking down. Everything's all dark.
Yeah, just
and,
like...
yeah, the world kind of
his golden
crashing.
Hour. The sun is setting. Like, his sun is setting. You can go there.
Totally. Yeah, this guy's done.
Jesus.
Oh, my God.
But so from a very early age, we can see he is, of course, supernaturally gifted and amazing. And his mom is like living for it. He gets in an exhibition at age 15.
Dang.
Then at age 16, tragedy hits the family again. And his mom dies of stomach cancer.
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, God. Okay.
No. And this would have been like, it sucks. And this was a huge gut punch for Dolly. I mean, he's like obsessed with mom and she was his biggest supporter. And now he's just left with dad, who's like scary and violent and not really nice. And on top of that, dad marries mom's sister.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
Oh, no.
Dolly's
aunt.
And it's like, dude, I get you're in mourning and like people look for comfort in weird places, but like, don't do it with the sisters. Come on. Like, don't.
You can confide in them, but why?
But don't put the P in the V.
No. Just fell in there. I don't know.
How'd that get there?
And sisters freaking weird, too, for doing that. Sis?
Yeah, no.
What the
sis,
fuck?
Sis, don't.
Keep it outside the family, y'all.
Okay?
Like, it's fine to remarry, but get another lady.
Go outside of the bloodline. Jeez.
Yeah, weird.
Can't. So, but so despite all this weird Dr. Phil-esque family drama, Dolly still manages to go on to the Royal Academy of Fine Arts in San Fernando in Madrid. And he's like fucking killing it, but you knew he would. So yeah. Then he takes a trip to Paris with his daddy and he meets Picasso.
Oh.
And he gets all inspired. And he's also friends with Joan Miró, who's from Spain as well. So that's like his Spanish, you know, buddy.
Okay.
So he's intermingling with these new ideas about art. And when he goes back to school where they're teaching like more classical art, impressionist style art, he's getting ready to graduate at the top of his class. He apparently has an oral exam, which is judged by three professors. And he gets up there and says, "I'm very sorry, but I am infinitely more intelligent than these three professors, and I therefore refuse to be examined by them. I know this subject much too well."
I want that energy. Can I have that? Can I just have a little slice of that?
Listen, I'm smarter than you.
Yeah. Why are we here right now?
Why? I'm just going to, I don't need.
You don't need to be judged by these idiots.
Right? Oh, God. So.
Wow. Yeah. Oozes confidence. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Damn, that's big dick energy.
Big dick energy, right?
Yeah.
Damn, well, after Dolly. This, he is expelled without actually ever graduating.
Well, yeah.
And here's the thing. Dolly grew up with this, like, deep sense of insecurity and confusion resulting from the death of his brother. But he's also described as having these very big emotions as a child, and that his mother and aunt responded to these emotions with, like, lots of love and attention.
Okay.
Which, if you're asking me as a parent, I think that just gives your kid the safety to learn how to manage their emotions in a healthy way so they can become well-adjusted adults. But because historians love to dramatize things, they say that this is the reason he becomes such a loud personality, because he's like getting comforted for being a loud and attention-seeking child.
Okay.
Which, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's better to have a little bit of confidence rather than just thinking your shit.
Yeah. A million percent. Like, God, sorry they comforted their child. Why should that be?
My bad.
Right? sorry for being a good mom. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is like how much do you coddle them? I'm like, just enough to where they know that you're going to be there to support them.
Oh,
that's
my God.
All they need.
Listen, this reminds me. So we had parent-teacher conferences the other week, and I do not like Diego's teacher. But so I went to drop off the other day, and Diego fell super fucking hard walking in. And he like fell on top of his finger. Have you ever done that where you like fall when your finger's pointed and you like,
dude, hurt.
And he was like crying, like the type of cry where he's actually hurt. Cause my son does
you
not.
You can tell the difference.
He doesn't hurt very easily. He's like, it's part of his autism where like he doesn't feel pain as easily as other typical kids. So I'm like comforting him, and of course we're running out of time, but the teacher comes out and she's like, "Are you okay if I just, take him?" And I'm like, "Can you just give us a few minutes? Like,
just
chill
the fuck out."
He's like,
lady,
not wanting to go in, and he always wants to go to school. So I know that it's serious that he needs comfort. And she fucking rolled her eyes at me.
Set her on fire. She's done. She is
so
done.
Annoyed. Like, listen, this is going to go a
my
lot
kid
easier.
Just hurt himself. Like, well,
and her
second.
Day is going to be infinitely better if I calm him down now versus
why do you want to scream and
aggravate the situation by pulling him out of my arms. So anyways, I'm what they call a soft parent, but I still set boundaries. So
it's better to have supportive parents than be like, sorry, you have to go to school even though you're in pain.
Yeah, just take him.
What is that going to teach him?
Like, what? Like, no.
She's
a piece of work. But so let me see. Where was I? Sorry, I got distracted with my fit of rage.
We like the tea. We like the teacher tea. Hell yeah. We want all that.
So when you think of Dolly, we often think of a very tiny, thin, long mustache that seemingly defies gravity with its very strong and evident upward point. This man was not afraid of a fashion statement. And if you just happen to Google Dolly quotes, you'll find very outlandish remarks. He was just that guy to say crazy shit for attention. So here's a good one. At age 6, I wanted to be a cook. At 7, I wanted to be Napoleon. And my ambition has been growing steadily ever since.
Damn. Okay. Oh, I like that.
I wanted to be Napoleon. So yes, it all comes off as exceedingly egotistical, teeters on the mind of a genius or possibly somebody who may need to seek some mental health support and medication maybe. But those who knew him best say that he was actually fearful of everything and actually very introverted and possibly shy behind it all. So that it's all sort of a facade. Yeah. So, yes, human beings are complex. You can be insecure and an extrovert. Yeah. Two things can be true. Let's not be shackled by these labels.
Yeah.
Right?
I think, too, like, there's something to be said when you find your right environment. Yes. Then you can
like
gain.
Like a goldfish. You can grow bigger and bigger.
Like, I know, I'm very confident when it comes to, like, the art stuff, but don't ask me what 8 times 6 is. Yeah, I have no idea what that is.
Yeah. For you, I think. Maybe.
Yeah.
So then he moves to Paris after he gets kicked out of school. And he's meeting tons of artists. He very naturally falls in with the avant-garde and the avant-garde movements that are happening in Paris at the time. So let's talk about surrealist art, surrealism. It's an art movement. And I feel like Dali gets the reputation of being like the surrealist painter, but it actually was a movement that was very much started before him. Mm-hmm. Many art movements at the time were quite radical compared to what came before them. And this is a time where they really start pushing the limits of what art can be.
Yeah.
And a lot of this is in response to the world wars that were World War One.
Yeah.
So the art was across these movements promoting the idea of artistic freedom, political freedom, and surrealism really focuses not only on freedom of expression, but freedom of your mind. So they wanted to untrap the inner trappings of your brain and unleash the darkest depths of human thought that were uninhibited by, like, societal pressures and norms. Yeah. Basically, like, let's get freaky. Let's get freaky. Don't worry what anybody thinks. Put your dreams out there. Get wild. Get stupid. Get dumb. Do whatever. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Because why not? Yeah.
Because why not?
We got all this crazy shit going on with all these wars and stuff. Like, have some fun.
Let's have some fun. This beat is sick. I want to take a rest. I'm going to just go stay. Okay, sorry. But no, it's like, you know, freedom of thought. Like, you know, this is what I'm thinking in my weird state. Like, there, why not put it down on paper? And this is definitely influenced by Freudian psychology. So that's the one that says guys want to do it with their moms and all girls want to do it with their dads. And, you know, and I was typing this out and I was like, oh, I'm like throwing up in my mouth a little bit just thinking about this. Seriously. Is not true for me. But
no.
But so the word surrealist means beyond reality. And it was coined by the French avant-garde poet Guillaume Apollinaire in 1917, and André Breton writes a cute little surrealism manifesto, and boom, we have ourselves a little art movement. So he would have been mingling with so many artists, Man Ray, Max Ernst, Chirico, Marcel Duchamp, Pablo Picasso, basically like the Peggy Guggenheim crew.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And this move to Paris is where we really see the start of his surrealist work. So look up Apparatus in Hand.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, angly.
Definitely some cubism vibes in this one, right?
Yeah.
So again, for those of you who can't get to a phone or if you're driving, don't try and look it up. Don't worry. We'll put it on the Instagram.
It's a triangle. Yeah. Man. Yeah.
So there's a central focal point that's it looks like a figure made up of triangles. Yeah. But the triangles have long, tiny arms and legs.
Yeah. And how to describe this painting?
And the hair at the top of the head is made up of like the top of a heart illustration.
Oh, yeah.
And we see a dreamlike background in blue that is expansive. And objects randomly are adorned throughout the image. One is a torso of a woman, which starts at like the vagina, hip, butt area. Yeah. And then goes up to like her neck. Mm-hmm. And then there's a dead donkey trying to eat a steak with a tummy full of flies.
Yes.
And random floating boobs.
Yeah, there's a couple boobs in here.
Like, look like they're like, like they're just flopping around. Yeah. And the symbolism is never validated by Dali, but we see fleshy, figurative type objects representing desire a lot throughout his works.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a constant play between fear and desire. So it's thought that the dead donkey and the fish skeleton may be like warnings of death and decay if you indulge your desires for these fleshy, weird boobs that are floating or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So I wonder who the model is for just the tits.
The tits, like, guys, they look like if you filled a sock with like rice or something and like attached it to another sock filled with rice.
And like swinging around.
Yeah, like swinging around.
Yeah, of like, I need you to pose for me, but I'm just going to be painting your tits floating in space. And be like, sure, sure.
Sure, yeah. Sure, okay.
Okay.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah, can you imagine the model for these boobs?
She's like she sees it and she's like, okay.
Oh, I thought you were gonna paint a portrait of me. Oh, it's just the tits floating in space.
Tits are floating in space.
I like it though.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, so you know, you can see this is like a dreamlike environment that echoes through most of his works. And there's a capability to read further into, like, each piece of symbolism. We see, like, a lot of grasshoppers and ants because Dali was terrified of grasshoppers and ants. So anytime they come up, they typically represent fear and decay.
Yeah.
And, like, death because, you know, ants go and, like, eat anything that's dying.
Yeah.
And so he tells a story that he was like bullied as a kid for his fears, and the bullies would fucking throw grasshoppers at him because they knew that he was scared of grasshoppers. Isn't that
Isn't
that fucked up?
Damn. Okay. Like that's traumatizing.
Like
for sure.
Really? Really? You're gonna take my worst nightmare and throw it at me? What the fuck?
I feel like if anyone's throwing grasshoppers at me, that I would be full straight jacket situation of like, oh, okay, that's enough. That's enough for me.
No, thank you.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So Dali was influenced by this area of subconscious that existed between being awake and being asleep, which is known as hypnagogia. He creates this like weird sleep practice so he could access and remember what his mind was producing through 1 second naps. Apparently he'd like sit there and he would have a plate, like a ceramic plate in his lap, and hold a large key in his hand so that the second he fell asleep, he would drop the key onto the plate and it would wake him up. And that's like where he got his inspiration for these ideas.
Oh, wow. Okay. So he's really trying to figure out this whole...
he's doing a thing. Yeah,
dream
for sure.
World. Yeah. Okay. So it's not just like dream journaling. It's really... He's working this part of his mind out.
Yeah. No, he has a whole practice. He's like really trying different methods to push his brain to give him these inspirations. So he's also known for the paranoic critical method, which is basically where you drive yourself to an extreme amount of paranoid delusion to explore your irrational and subconscious mind. So, yeah. So he's pushing this idea that you have thoughts that should be uninhibited by society and that we should free ourselves of morals and justice, which gets really dangerous for him.
Okay. We like justice, though.
I know.
Morals are good, too.
Listen, I, like, get it. Like, I get what he's trying to do, but, like... Yeah.
Is that dangerous?
I don't know if I can, like, exactly get behind it.
Yeah.
Know? Like for the sake of art, you need to be shitty. Like, I don't know.
I think, too, just, like, exploring the human mind without the boundaries of what we're socialized to be is hard. Yeah. And to, like, unlock something where you're like, is this an absolutely natural thing that my brain is doing, or is it conditioned to do this?
Right.
And that would be hard to kind of separate of.
Totally.
Is this what I really think?
Yeah.
Or is this what I'm conditioned to think?
Right.
Based on just how I was raised or parents and all that.
So everything.
My environment. Mean, yeah. Are we born with stuff like morals and justice and things like that?
Yeah.
Where it's maybe a little bit of both.
Maybe, I don't know. We've, like, evolved. I think that's, like, what makes us humans, right? Like,
to have a level of empathy. That's cool, though. I like where he's at, but it's also could be probably dangerous.
Well, and we're going to get into it, but first things, let's talk about some fun stuff. So things start picking up for him. He's making friends. He's making art. He's killing it. And then one day walks in Gala Eluard. I don't know. Nailed it. And things would never quite be the same after this. So let's take a minute to talk about Gala. Because this bitch is T and a half.
Ooh.
So Gala was born in Russia to a family of intellects. And apparently she would grow up hearing artists and poets have conversations around her family dinner table. Which would have been, like, really uncommon for girls at the time to have access to those type of conversations.
Yeah.
Well, she gets sick with tuberculosis at 17 and has to go into a hospital where she meets her first husband, Paul. They fall in love, have a daughter, everything's going well, but then she probably has some postpartum or something because she's fucking terrible, like, worst mom ever. Yeah, so maybe we give her a little grace. I will say most historians do not, and you'll come to find out why. But so basically she's, like, unraveling and decides, you know what, Paul, this whole, like, monogamy thing, it's not working for me. Okay. So they enter into a menage a trois with Max Ernst.
Ooh. Okay.
And then she starts having affairs with many, many, many artists.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Louis Aragon, André Breton, good old Maxi Ernst. So, yes, her and Peggy Googs definitely have shared some sausages. For damn. Sure.
Yeah. So she got the green light from husband and is like... Yeah. Great.
She got the green light. Yeah. And she's like, okay, cool. Deuces. Well, I'm going to go do it with, like, so yeah, I'm here.
Everybody. Wow. Okay.
So Dali, when he sees her, he's apparently, like, bewitched. And he says, she was destined to be my grand diva, the one who moves forward, my victory, my wife. So, yeah, they start a nasty love affair.
Oh.
Yeah, nasty. And 4 months later, Gala leaves her daughter and husband and moves in with Dali. He would have been 25 at the time, and she was 36.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, Dali was, like, obsessed. Like, when I say obsessed, I mean he was obsessed with Gala. He's described as being this sort of, like, timid virgin, and she's described as being this demonic nymphomaniac.
Oh.
Which, like, get it, girl.
Sounds like she just has a WAP. Like, it's fine. You can do that.
I mean,
but demonic?
Yeah, she's described as, like, on the prowl. like breaking hearts and taking names sort of deal.
Okay.
And the thing is that like Dolly was really there for her, and she has thought – it's thought that she was like sort of using him.
Oh, okay.
That she was looking for the most talented surrealist so that she could ride that horse all the way to the bank. Which, wow. Like, girl, get it, though, a little bit.
Yeah. But, like, be nice.
But, yeah, but, like, be nice.
Bring him down, like, slow. Yeah.
Yeah. But she's seriously dedicated to getting the world to understand how talented Dolly is. She's the one promoting the work, going to gallery after gallery after gallery, getting him in with people to purchase the work. So she's the one who starts getting his shit off the ground. But she's also controversial. She's said to be the reason Dolly's fame happens and that there is no Dolly without her.
Oh.
So, yeah. But once they meet, this is when his eccentric fashion really starts to be introduced. Oh. And they are killing it. They really start making money. But as luck would have it, World War II starts picking up. And together they decide to move to New York City.
Oh, New York.
So right. We progressively see Dolly become more and more unhinged. Okay. But also this like mysticism is created. They're creating that lore about themselves as this insanely artsy couple. Yes. So let's talk about the weird things they do. There's a ball thrown for them called the Dolly Ball in New York, and he arrives wearing a glass case buckled to his chest. Okay. And inside there's a bra in it.
Okay. Okay.
They attend another ball dressed as the Lindbergh baby and his kidnapper.
Oh.
This one fucked me up a little bit. So the Lindbergh baby was a 2-year-old boy that was kidnapped and later found dead in the 30s. Yeah. And because I have young kids, I was, like, ready to cry and vomit at the same time researching this. But the point is they're not afraid to do things that are fucked up and cause a lot of shock value. They actually did apologize for that one, though, in the tabloids.
Okay.
He's invited to give a lecture, and he walks in holding a pool cue in one hand and 2 wolfhounds on a leash in the other. And then when he
it's fine. These are my dogs. It's
these
cool.
are my dogs. I just thought they wanted to come. They wanted to hear. And then when he gives the lecture, he's wearing a fucking deep sea diving suit and helmet. And when they're like, "Why the fuck are you wearing that?" He said, "I just wanted to show that I was like plunging deeply into the human mind." Don't worry.
Okay.
About it.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we got it.
I so wanted. Do one of those lectures, like, let me go back.
Not give and a see. Just walk in wearing, like, I don't know what the equivalent would be now, probably.
I don't know. Like a wetsuit. Yeah.
Well, my favorite of all is the dinner parties. So they threw these elaborate dinner parties that often required all the guests to dress in costumes. Mm-hmm. And at the first one, Gala is seated in a large, elaborate bed wearing a headdress of a unicorn. So the whole night, she's just sat in this giant satin bed.
I like the vibe, though.
Oh, my God.
I always like to eat. I'm gross. I always like to eat in bed, so. I get her vibe.
Yeah. I mean, what?
I don't wear a headdress, though.
Do whatever. It's like a huge headdress. And they hire animals from the San Francisco Zoo to come to their parties. And at one point, she's bottle feeding a fucking lion while there's a swarm of spider monkeys jumping all around. Everything's decorated elaborately with the surrealist style, even the food. So Dolly was obsessed with food. He loved food so much, especially cauliflower. He could go on and on about cauliflower and how it reminded him of a rhinoceros forever. But he fucking hates spinach. So he has a funny quote on spinach. "That detestable and degrading vegetable. If I hate that, it's because it's shapeless like liberty."
Okay. You could just say, I don't like spinach. It's fine.
Strong opinions. Yeah, you could just say, no, thanks. It's not fine. My thing. It's cool. But he... So they start, he starts doing at this point anything for money. They're living this lavish lifestyle. He's making movies. He's doing all like sculptures, paintings. And he even goes on to write and illustrate a cookbook called Les Dîners with Gala. And if you look it up, the cover of it is so cool. Like little crawfish on the front.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of want it.
Right? It's so cute.
Should I get a copy?
You might need to.
They have it on Amazon.
I know. I think it's like 60 bucks. It's adorable.
Yeah. No, it's really cool.
But
there's like a kid that's like stabbing a frog.
Yeah, a frog on the front.
Yeah. Weird.
But yeah, the recipes are not just your common casseroles and nice pasta dishes. So of course, Dali, he would never throw just a normal, easy, edible dinner party. His guests were greeted with dishes such as platters full of live frogs. They'd jump out at you. Or a fish served in a satin high heel on a plate. So the dinners are not for the weak. Definitely not for the very hungry. And a lot of the dishes were just like fucking confusing. But people loved going to these parties.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's definitely a shock element to everything they do. Everything they do is in the tabloids. They're building this image and it's working. And everybody who's anybody is at these parties. Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Andy Warhol, Frank Zappa, John Lennon, Dennis Hopper, Jackie O, Alice Cooper. So cool. Wide variety of people that he has.
A funky crowd.
Yeah. But let's get into the weird sex stuff.
Oh, yeah. Obviously. Yeah, let's obviously. Go.
So Gala is like this red hot mama who's not going to be weighted down by just one lover. And Dali is here for it. So, yes, Dali was totally down for your girl to get down with all sorts of dudes. So it's rumored that Dali has this, like, massive fear of vaginas. Oh. And that he was basically impotent when it came down to the sex stuff because of it.
When it comes down to it, you gotta put that thing in there. Yeah.
I know. And I don't know if I like fully buy that they never did it because they say it was like a massive love affair. But can you have a massive love affair with a very, very horny lady without putting the P in the V?
I mean, these guys are surfing fish and high heels. I think they get creative. They probably get really creative in the bedroom. There's other forms of intimacy rather than just penetration.
Yes.
But I would think that our girl would probably need that D.
I just feel like if you're like, yeah. But maybe she just loved that he would let her. So he loved that she had these boyfriends. He was like kind of takes the pressure off by it.
Yeah.
And I think it did, to your point, take the pressure off.
Yeah.
And so he would actually at the parties, like they would invite people back to, be painted or whatever. And then they would have these like giant orgies and he would just sit and watch.
Yeah.
So he was a voyeur. Like he really loved just
that's fine.
Watching and that's good. Good for them.
Yeah.
So this comes up in the work, and so when we're talking about persistence of memory from 1934, which is the melting clock painting, if you look at it, there's a fleshy figure laying in the center where you can see it being draped on the ground, like it almost looks like a sad sleeping limp figure
thing
against a vast desert background. There's this really realist quality to several clocks that appear to be melting and draped over tree branches, over the figure, off of a ledge. It's thought that the clocks melting speaks to time losing all meaning when you're in this dreamlike state.
Okay, yeah.
There's a gold clock being attacked by ants in the bottom left, which symbolizes death and decay because ants eat dead and dying things. Get it? So time is dying and, you can go there.
Yeah.
Well, and it's thought that, like, this reflects limp penises. And it was also clearly about his impotency.
Okay.
His inability to get it up pretty much is reflected in his sad, limp, laying body.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there is a body with like an eyelash. Mm-hmm. So it, that could be kind of pointing to that this is maybe a glamorous woman or something. And then the clock melting over the bottom. It does kind of look too, if I'm being gross, like it does kind of look like the what's the little time adjuster thing on the clock? That thing looks kind of like a little penis-y.
I don't know what it's called. Oh, like, you mean the bezel, like the crown of the clock?
That sounds better than what what the I crown, said.
I think is what it's called.
Yeah, that looks a little bit penis-y because the other clocks don't have that. They have like a normal looking one.
Sure.
But this one looks like a head of the penis.
Well, you can go wherever the fuck you want with it because motherfucker never told us or asserted what it actually meant. So, and that's good, you know, make your viewers think about what you got going on.
Yeah.
So, regardless if Dali and Gala got it on or not, it's also rumored that they were allowed to have boyfriends and girlfriends, and they operated under this understanding that Dali's a genius, like, but you're my number one bitch. So it's like, mm-hmm. we can do whatever we want, but at the end of the day, it's like you and me through the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now it's time to get into the not so fun stuff because I feel like if I had done this first, it would have put a damper on everything else. So remember how I said nationalism will play a role and this is World War II times?
Yes.
Yeah. So the poster boy for weird nationalist things, Hitler, is in full swing. And in Spain, there's also fascist leader Francisco Franco. So Dali does make some anti-war works before they move to America in the 30s. And even has a painting predicting the Spanish Civil War and depicting grotesque arms and legs and squeezy boobs and fleshy decay and shit. So you would think like anti-war, anti-fascist, right?
Yeah.
Well, the truth is that Dali never denounces either after this point. So
okay,
he does try to remain politically ambiguous.
Okay.
But do you remember André Breton? We talked about the surrealist founder, ex-lover of Gala.
Yeah.
Slash hater of Gala. Slash possibly jealous of Dali and Gala.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so he and Dali are corresponding with one another, and Dali writes to him these crazy long letters about how he should create a new religion. So here's the quote. Okay. Christ was an amateur when it came to creating a religion. I believe more and more that we surrealists are turning into priests. It is an idea that has been haunting me for a long time now, so much that one of my urgent projects is to invent a religion. So there can be no priest without religion. It is essentially anti-Christian and materialistic based on the progress of specific scientists. In other words, like a godless and scientific religion.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool, right? Whatever. Do whatever.
Sure. Fine. Yeah.
A little bit like God complex, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this part is in writing and we have the letter from André Breton. So it's like, okay, yeah, whatever. Well, André Breton is not amused. He thinks this is in line with all these crazy leaders at the time, Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin. And he then goes on to say, look, Dali wrote me this other letter. I don't have it, but this is what it said. So he like rewrites this supposed letter that happens. And it says,
okay.
I declare that even though I may have pity and negative opinion of the cruel lynchings and bonfires, I admit to feeling real pleasure and considerable sexual excitement in reading about such things. And I do not intend to censure those who burn blacks alive and lynch them. I have to consider the legitimate pleasure that drives these people, although I reject the odious social reasons beyond passion and pleasure that are causes of such conflict.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously is fucking horrible.
Yes.
I mean, I don't care if you're going for shock or for art. Like, you need to reel it in. This one, I cannot get behind.
Obviously. Yeah. I mean, he's like kind of expressing his like sadism, I guess. Which is okay, do you, but like it's also I hope he didn't write that.
I hope he – well, yeah. So that's – yeah. The thing, though, that is, like, yes, it's rumored because it wasn't actually written down by Dolly. But yeah. The thing is that he never denounces fascism or anything. So, like, like, you need it. Like, if that's going to come out about you, you have to at least – and he does say, like, I'm not a Hitler person. Like, he does say something to sort of reject that, but he never okay. denounces the fascist leader that's leading Spain at this time. So okay. long yeah. story short, Dolly is kicked out of the Surrealism Club due to these racist proclamations and good because fuck that.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Consequences.
For that. Yeah. yeah. Like, yeah. Like, you can say whatever you want, but there are consequences. To all you exactly. people that are like, and I can't say anything anymore.
Yeah, and I've totally said that to, like, my students when it comes to artistic license.
Right.
Like, you can do anything. Like, that's the beautiful thing about art is it's you have absolute right. freedom within the laws for the most part.
Right.
Like, you have absolute freedom to paint anything you want, to sculpt anything you want. However, you have to take responsibility yeah, for it. So if absolutely. You are going to be subversive with your subject matter, then it'll piss people off and you yeah. will have to answer to it. You need to be responsible yeah. and answer to it. Yeah. And if you are going to do something, yeah, paint something hateful, you need to get some help. if you're
and you also are not allowed in my class anymore.
Totally. Yeah. If you're obviously, yeah, if you're going to paint something hateful, it is artistic license. You can do it, but do you want to put that out there
yeah.
and offend people in a horrific way?
And also, like, fuck you.
Go yeah, back in your and hole. And get some go read get a some book.
Help.
Yeah, get edumacated a little bit on if you're gonna do something hateful.
Yeah, just like don't
just
do
don't,
it.
Just don't. Just keep that to yourself.
Yeah,
write it down in a book and then put it away.
Yeah, it is one of those things, and I'll talk about this in a bit, but it's like one of those things where you're like, did you really mean that, or were you just saying that to, like, cause a stir?
There's something
like
about
shock. Always did, you know,
too. Yeah,
like, I don't know. I don't know, man.
There's a place to be shocking, I think. Yeah. And and I feel like this too, because this came up like a little while ago about the whole, like, Balenciaga huge issue of you got to find the right people, you got to find the right audience for that kind of thing. I think that when it comes to putting out, like, a PR, and I don't know if you guys know about what happened with Balenciaga and why there was so much controversy around that. That could totally be a whole episode in itself. But basically, Balenciaga put out a PR advertisement for their fashions.
Right.
And it did not hit correctly. So right. there was and they had in some of those photos, they had references to artists like Matthew Barney and Bormans.
Right.
Where they, I get it. You're making an artistic statement. I do not think that they're supporting child abuse or, or anything like that. I mean, if they are, fuck them. And yeah, I'm totally wrong then if they are doing that. But I think they were putting out an artistic statement about how, you know, we're sexualizing children
right.
and all this dark, evil stuff.
Right.
I don't know if they were on the side of that. I'm going to assume not, since there were references to artists like Matthew Barney who talk about that in their work.
Right.
But it's really, really dangerous if you're putting that kind of thing out there in the wrong environment. Of if you are trying to sell this to the wrong person, then somebody that has a twisted mind might say, oh, okay, child abuse is fashionable now. Great. Right. Okay. But there's a lot of things that go down in art galleries with the right people that understand the context to this.
Right.
Of if these type of photographs were just shown of, oh, a Balenciaga collaboration of some kind in an art gallery, and we're not shown as a PR situation, as a public relations type of situation, then nobody would have batted an eye on this.
Right, right.
So it's a lot about be careful for who your audience is. The idea, I think, of advertisement is that you're selling a lifestyle. When it comes to advertising fashion, I'm selling you this. This is, you want to be this girl, right? So buy right. this dress and you could be this girl. You could be this beautiful model. And sure, that's just, you need the cash. So I got it. You need to sell these garments. That's for some. You have to. You need to make the money. Well, it's
like, don't put that in a museum. Don't put it in a magazine.
Exactly. Like, exactly. Because it could fall into the wrong hands, and it can be dangerous in the wrong.
Yeah.
And misinterpreted. Absolutely.
Right. If you're going to put out these controversial statements, you need to maintain some control of the conversation that happens. That
put it in the gallery.
Them.
No problem. Yeah. Put it in a weird gallery. The art people, the art community will get... Oh, okay. He's making connections to Matthew Barney.
Right.
Got it. Okay. He's talking about some deep, dark shit.
Right.
But okay. Yeah. I you get that it's commentary right. instead of I'm promoting this.
Right. I mean, I think in this case, it's definitely like no matter what audience he would have told that to, it goes badly. But I will say that his friends advocate for him. In interviews saying like, no, it's just a show. Like, it's not who he really was.
It's supposed to be shocking.
But,
okay.
But
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's a weird time. And
it's
like,
it's different times,
it's
too.
It's the kind of thing, like, you gotta, like, you can't do that. Like, I
think
care.
There was a lot of things, too, during that time, during World War II, that they didn't realize the severity of really what was going on there. I think there was a lot of people that didn't fully realize until the aftermath.
Right. But I think these artists definitely knew what was going on. And I think that's like, because I think that was like part of their agenda is being massively involved in the politics because the movements respond to them. So all of these movements like are geared towards being anti- like society establishment more because we don't want to subscribe to a world where you have to be a obedient soldier, where you have to like, they were promoting the war as something that should be good to maintain like a nationalist society, like a where there's order and, you know, structure, and that's what we need. And so they're responding to that by saying, like,
propaganda posters.
Right. And they're responding by saying, like, no, anything goes, and we should be able to do what we want. And
right. And you would think most artists would be on the side of anti-war.
Yeah. I mean, question.
And most people are on the side of, like, anti-genocide.
You would hope, but I mean, well. But yeah, so it's okay.
It's crazy to think about. Yeah,
yeah,
something
yeah, yeah.
Something
yeah.
to think about.
Something to think about for sure. So yeah, so continuing.
Okay. On a lighter note.
On a lighter note. So him and Gala move back to Spain. And at this point, they're living in Port Lligat, they assume an almost conventional lifestyle. They're visiting old friends. He's painting 18 hours a day, surrounded by beautiful Spain. So all of those vast backgrounds that you see in all of his paintings are always referencing Spain and Catalonia. And that's where that influence comes from. And you know what? They're getting older at this point. He's 54. She's 65. She's like ready to sort of be done with the crazy media extravaganza, but he's not quite there yet. So in 1965, he meets Amanda Lear, and this is like the bitch. She's making music. She's a model. She's super hot. She's dating Brian Jones from the Rolling Stones. She's an ex of David Bowie. There's a song called Amanda Jones. It's about her. And so Dolly and her hit it off, have a huge love affair. And at the end of the weekend, he goes, oh, yeah, my wife, Gala, she's, like, on her way. She's like, don't worry. She can be really difficult, though. So And Amanda Lear was like, what the fuck? You're married? Okay.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So here's the thing about Gala and why she gets a bad rap. She was very judgmental and difficult. She would often bite people if she didn't like them.
What?
And bark at them. Yeah.
All right.
I know. Whoa. The huevos on this, I mean, she was just bite the balls people. On this woman.
She would bite, like, people. Did she injure people with the biting? Do you know?
I mean, probably.
Of like, or was it like just a weird like, oh.
No, it was like aggressive biting. Like, okay, aggressive,
like,
biting.
I need to be scared of this bitch, yeah, biting me.
Like, people were afraid of her. People were absolutely afraid of her.
Oh, and wild.
So
oh,
she wild. Also she's also having like very serious affairs with other men. And so when she meets Amanda Lear, Dolly's like, she actually hits it off with her, surprisingly, and sort of arranges this thing where she's like, listen, I don't want to go to these, like, press events anymore. Amanda Lear, she's young. She's 26. Of course she wants to go to the press events. She's trying to up and come in her fame. So yeah. This is perfect for everybody. And they sort of become a throuple. And
okay. She's like a unicorn.
And the press eat it up. They love it. This is the 60s. It's the era of free love. Okay. And Dolly and Lear are becoming this iconic couple. And okay. Gala's like, listen, Dolly, I want a house. So up until this point, they're like hemorrhaging cash like crazy. Oh. All these parties are thrown at a hotel, the St. Regis in New York. They live in the St. Regis for years.
They live in the hotel?
Yeah, they live in the hotel. They don't own any property except for his, like, hometown home, like, he inherits from dad. So
okay.
She's like, listen, I want you to buy me a house. I want you to buy me a castle. So he buys her a castle in Poopole. And once purchased, she's like, listen, you're not to come here unless you have an invitation. Also, you're no longer this beautiful asexual boy I fell in love with. You're like old and wrinkly, so I don't really want you over ever. And so Dolly is living alone in Port Lligat, and he's devastated from this whole situation. She's up there, meanwhile, in her 80s, fucking all kinds of young dudes.
I want to be in my 80s in a castle fucking young
guys. Oh my
God.
And she buys all the young dudes like lavish gifts. She even buys this one guy a house that's like $1 million home. She's like wiling, and Dolly's getting fucking pissed. He's like,
yeah, she's not even allowed to go there.
She's giving away his paintings to these young guys, and then he sees one that's up for auction at Christie's, and he's like, are you fucking kidding me? One of your lovers put one of my paintings up for auction at Christie's? Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Damn. So
the rumor is that they get into a physical altercation. And after this, Dolly's health deteriorates and he's diagnosed with Parkinson's. Well, some people say it's from a concoction of drugs that Gala is administering to him because he develops an extreme tremor in his right arm. He's not able to paint. He's severely depressed. And you would think Gala would be like, okay, let me like take care of you or something. Yeah. But instead, she calls Amanda Lear and she's like, Amanda, look, you got to go help Dolly. He's not painting. And if he's not painting, he's useless to me. He's not making me any money.
Dude.
Fucking.
Okay. Now bitch. I was like, I liked her. Now I don't.
No, it gets worse. So then she sends thousands of pieces of paper to him to have him sign, and they're blank. And Amanda Lear's like watching him sign all these things, and she's like, you should, like, what are you signing? And he's like, I'm just signing these papers, it's fine. Well, a bunch of art starts circulating that's like fake Dolly's. Yeah. So, bitch, the rumor is that she was like having him sign them.
Yeah.
But then having them painted by other people.
Yeah.
So super fucked up. Yeah.
Oh, so, fuck that, bitch. I know. Man. So schemey, dude. Like, that
so
is
so fucked, right?
That is something else. That's
so
devious.
So this old broad finally dies June 10th, 1982. She was 87. Dolly is devastated, and he moves into the castle to relish in her memory, even though he never really fucking lived there.
Yeah.
So I don't understand that. But
I mean, might as well. Here's his castle's here. Whatever. It's mine.
apparently, when visitors come over, he will only see them from behind a door or a wall because he doesn't want them to see his ugly old face. That's how vain he was.
Oh,
I know.
Like, aging is natural.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I tell myself that every day. well, finally, his friends intervene. They get him the fuck out of there. They move him into a museum that he had built, the Dali Museum, that's still in Spain today. And he lives out the rest of his days watching people come and admire his paintings.
Okay.
He dies just 2 days after my birthday, January 23rd, 1989.
Damn.
So his legacy lives on in a very real way. His paintings are unlike anything I think anyone's ever done, even though other surrealist painters sort of look like him. He's like a world of his own, for sure.
Yeah, no.
Definitely a genius. Different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Racist asshole, controversial, eccentric.
Yeah.
Like a little tiny, you know, emotional lover boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Funky. I mean, that shit with his chick, like, that's pretty wild. What the right? fuck? Damn.
A wild fucking ride.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like the dinner party thing, though.
It's dinner party's cool. Dope.
Yeah.
So when thinking about the person at the party, I know we've done this one before, I think, but Kanye West.
Yes.
Like a million percent, right?
Yeah.
So I was going to go Dennis Rodman.
A lot of these are Kanye.
I know. I was going to go Dennis Rodman because of the, like, not afraid of a bit bold fashion statement, you know,
okay.
that guy. Yeah. But then once I learned about the paranoia, the outlandish statements, like, Kanye's the one that's like, slavery was a choice, right?
Yes. Yeah. Not cool.
Not cool,
Kanye.
Not cool.
And but is that really how you feel, or are you just being shocking?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like, is this real, or is this?
Do you just want people to talk about
you? Is this curated? Yeah. Is this doctored up?
Totally.
And then I love the when he goes to like one award show, he's wearing slides with socks and the slides are too small and everybody's like ragging on him. So then at the next award show, he wears oversized like 2-foot by 3-foot slides.
He gets it. Yeah.
So funny. I love that.
Yeah.
One of those where like I love the music and I've loved him for years and then he goes and does all this shit that I'm like, fuck, I can't like you anymore, man.
Do I separate the artist from the art or does the artist need to be accountable for some of this, some of these ideas that are not kosher? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. What a weirdo. Okay.
Yeah.
I do want a little bit of that. Just I do like the whole standing in front of your professors and be like, you know what? I'm smarter than y'all. Like, I don't know why we're doing this right now. This is stupid.
What am I doing here? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
I do want a little sprinkle of that.
Yeah. So the next time you go to ask your boss for a raise or talk to your professors, just remember they ain't shit.
They're not.
Who are they?
Yeah. Ew.
Fuck them. No.
Fuck out of here. I liked that one.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah. So, what is art? What the heck is it anyway?
All right. So should we do some shameless self-promotion?
All right. Check us out on Instagram,
baroque.b.podcast.
If you have questions or if you have suggestions or if you have other opinions, you can always DM us.
Need to vent. You need somebody to talk to.
Yeah. Anything. One of these topics you were into, one of them you didn't like. It's fine.
It's fine.
Like, you can DM us. Yeah. And we will respond to you.
Yes, we will.
We do have a Patreon. All of our links are in our bio on our Instagram. Yes. You can also check out our website, brokebeatpodcast.com, and you can sign up, check out our Patreon. We've got some new content coming out there, mm-hmm. and yes, yes, give us money. Because we need it. Oh my God. Yes. And yeah. We have stickers. So
we have stickers and yes. Leave a 5-star review.
Only. If you didn't like it, just don't leave anything. It's just, fine.
Yeah, just move on about your day. It's okay.
Plenty of other podcasts.
We don't need to have hurt feelings. We don't need to hurt your feelings. We love you, but please just, yeah, kindly.
2-star guy, we're talking to you, 2-star guy.
But yeah, the stars keep us going. You guys keep us going. Your support keeps us going. So please. Give thank us a 5-star review. Thank you. Oh, and also, if you can't do anything at all, just keep listening.
Yeah, we're here every Wednesday for you.
For you.
Yeah.
All right, listen.
We love you. Bye.